last name, Lahong. I'm debating with myself whether I should drop the moniker, the Black Chinese guy, because a lot of people across the continent had gotten used to that name during my days on, you know, a commercial platform. But now, now that I've grown older, now that I've got kids, I'm a dad. should I still be using the Black Chinese guy moniker? You can let me know in the comments how you feel about that. I know there was a big conversation that we had just on the name alone on TikTok, and that video was trending. And I was hearing that Kaya and Kaya FM, Kaya FM's Kumba and Glenn were debating with themselves or amongst themselves, arguing about the pronunciation of my surname. So here goes, right? Because we have to set the tone right for this very first episode. It's actually Lerong. Lerong is firewood. If you are Sotho speaking, Pedi speaking, Tswana, any of those Nguni languages, you would know what Lerong is. It's sometimes spelled with the G, and it's firewood. It's the wood that you go and you get from the felt, right? And you bring it back. Sometimes it's the women that go and gather a whole logs so that we have fire ready for our supper, for our water in the evening bath. This is like the lifestyle that happens in the villages, right? So those logs are called Lerong. So now that we've got that out of the way, our very first episode on Rise Resilience today is a very special one, because we are seeing that a lot of South Africans in particular are not in a good place financially, right? And I know I'm putting it very simplistic, very simply, but we'll get into why that is, right? And the subject of today's conversation is literally how to overcome financial crises, right? And my very, 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 very special guest, I almost want to do like a round of applause or like a boop, 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 or like a drum roll. Just out of sheer excitement, Jean, to have you in studio. Jean, you're a financial expert. You are a life coach, right? You go and you speak to people about how to make money, but more importantly, how to sustain it. A lot of us falter on the latter because we work so hard or we hustle so hard to try and get that first 10,000 rand, that first 5,000 rand, that first million, and then to replicate that becomes an even bigger challenge, right? And that's where you then separate the cream from the rest. I imagine the people who are meant to be wealthy, meaning their mindset is tuned right, then go on to make another million and another million and another million and so on. But your story on its own is very interesting because your background says that you came from a point, well, a family that was very abundant, prosperous, and then things changed overnight. Talk me through that firstly.
Okay. Yeah, and I think, you know, it was not an easy transition, obviously, going through that at such a young age.
Right.
But again, I think it is a reason why I got to this place of wanting to empower other people around money, specifically around financial wellness, so that they don't experience the same financial challenges and hardships that I've experienced along their journey. So my dad was actually a very successful businessman, and my mom was able to stay at home. Together they had four kids.
Nice. Where are you in that fourth?
I'm second.
You're second.
So I was born in the mid-70s.
Oh my gosh.
10:50 this year.
I keep hearing that the 70s were a time to be alive. Yeah. Everyone else born after that, look, we missed out on a good party in the 70s. But your parents were having that, which is how you happened.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think also, you know, my dad's success probably got to him, he became an alcoholic, you know, abused my mom.
Oh,
and
no.
So eventually at some point, this went on for probably about 10 years, because I remember the turning point in my life came when I was about 8 years old and my dad decided to leave. And I think it was the best decision he probably could have made for all of us because, you know, I mean, where does a stay-at-home mom go with four kids?
Put a timeline in my head. This is 1978.
Yeah. No, well, I was born in 74, so it was about 8 years later, yeah.
Okay. She's, and it was still apartheid South Africa then.
Yeah.
So being a single woman who now has to raise these four kids in apartheid South Africa, that must have been very tough for your mom, I imagine.
It was. But I think also, you know, if I look at my dad, he was able to, as an Indian man, build a successful business in the middle of apartheid. So, you know, it's just, again, the possibility of having a vision and being able to work towards that vision and wanting something different for your life can happen in any circumstances.
Sure.
So, yeah. So in any event, so he left when I was eight, and my mom was, and we lost everything in that process. We lost our home, wealth, everything. We were taken in by family members, had to relocate from Durban to Cape Town. And, you know, so life was pretty hard after that, because in that first few years of my life, I had exposure to extramural lessons, drama, piano, dance, we didn't really get, they got to travel though. They got to travel to lots of places overseas.
Right.
And, but we lived in a big house, you know. I always say we went from living in a 5-bedroom house to all 5 of us living in one room.
Oh, wow. So that must have been quite a culture shock
and a
huge shift mentally, right? To just get used to the new environment.
So, you know, to be honest, I think as children, we are a lot more resilient than what we give ourselves credit for. I don't remember, I mean, I remember it being hard, because now you've got an absent father, you've got no financial security. You've also lost your mom in that process, who was taking care of you while while she was at home.
Right.
Who's now forced to work sometimes 2 jobs at a time just to be able to put food on the table. So you very quickly grow up.
Mom was a soldier. Hey, she soldiered on. Kudos to mom.
Yeah.
Gee whiz, that is quite a story, Jean. And I imagine that then gave birth to the life you are living right now. 50 years on, some 42 years ago, you were experiencing life-altering moments. Mm-hmm. You're even, I could say, called to your purpose.
Absolutely.
Most of us don't realize that we learn, or we come to know what our calling will be at that early age. But because we are looking at the world with different eyes, we go through all these other detours, which are necessary. Mm-hmm. But most of us already know what we're going to be doing for the rest of our lives by the time we are 6. When they ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? The first 3 things that you usually say, you will likely land up being one of those things.
Yeah, I didn't even have those dreams and visions when I was 6. Obviously, you know, dealing with the trauma of the violence and all of that stuff.
Right.
But I think for me, the turning point in my career was when I wanted to become a psychologist. And that was probably towards the end of my schooling career. And for obvious reasons, I was dealing with so much childhood trauma that I wanted to be able to, you know, deal with some of the personal issues and understand the issues that was going on in my head.
Yeah.
And also to help other kids navigate through similar experiences. And so I wanted to study psychology. That was my dream. I didn't have money to study full time, so I studied part time. And, you know, again, it took me a very long time to finish my degree.
Right.
It's embarrassing to actually admit, but anyway.
Wait, how long did it take you? It's not embarrassing. I know someone that I studied with in 2007.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm revealing my age. And they were still at it by 2014, last I checked. And they weren't studying PhD or anything of that sort. I'm that's laughing too loudly.
No, but that's perseverance.
How long did it take you, Jean?
It took me about 9 years, but I'll tell you why it took me so long.
Okay.
So I did have an opportunity. My mom's siblings all got together to pay for my studies for my first year.
Right.
But I had such a challenging relationship with money that I felt very guilty taking that money from them. And so there was a lot of that guilt and shame. And so I wanted to do this on my own. So my first year I did full time. My second year, I needed to find a job, got a job, started working. So I didn't study that second year. The third year, you know, whatever money I had, whatever, how many subjects I could actually do in that year. So,
okay.
And again, I wasn't completely focused.
Right.
Because it's challenging to study part time and, you know, work full time and then still manage your social life as well.
Also, the moment you start getting paid or earning any form of income as a young person, the immediate thought and the voice in our head tells us, okay, now I've got money. I don't really need to go back to school. Mm. And it's so very, it's the most challenging thing to try and silence that voice, because you're looking at the money in your hands and you have to convince yourself, no, you still need to go back to school so we can finish.
Yeah.
What was that voice saying to you at that time?
So, you know, again, I think having a big vision of what it is you want to achieve in your life, because one degree is generally not even enough. And I'm not saying a degree or formal studies is the only way to earn an income or work towards your vision, but I think it does obviously help to give you some sort of foundation to build on. But so again, your question, sorry.
No, I was asking, so obviously when you are now realizing that as a young person, you have an earning potential, how loud was the voice in your head convincing you to go back to school and not be caught in the trap of, well, I'm making money anyways now, I don't really need to go back to school?
Yeah. So I think it was my love for psychology. And, you know, it helped me immensely. I always say whatever you've studied is never a waste, even though you might not end up practicing in that specific profession.
Yes.
Psychology helped me to understand myself better. It helped me to understand other people. And the pieces of the puzzle only started to fit together as to why all these things, all these events and lessons had to happen in my life.
Right.
Why my dad had to leave, why I needed to go through an experience of having money to having nothing, why I needed to study psychology. All of these things would not have happened, or who I am today, I would not be that person if all of those things hadn't happened.
Right.
To me.
There was a bigger vision from God's perspective, right? There was a bigger purpose, and all the detours were necessary because those were building blocks for the person you ultimately are now.
100%.
This gene that I'm experiencing right now would have been a different gene had dad stuck around, had dad not abused mom when you guys were younger, right? Because even your outlook or your view of the world would have been so much different.
Yeah. You know, our soul goes through, or our soul needs certain lessons in order to develop and grow. We only learn through hardship and challenges.
So true.
So I always say this, I'm very grateful. It wasn't nice going through it, but I'm very grateful for the lessons that I've learned. And I think everybody has those lessons that they need to learn.
Yeah.
How quickly you overcome and stand back up on your feet again. I love the person who I've become today.
Yes.
I was a shy, reserved, quiet kid. You know, people...
I cannot imagine that.
I promise you.
She lights up a room.
I wouldn't even raise my hand in a class.
Were you that
even
kid?
In my 30s, in a boardroom, I would have anxiety building up inside me to ask a question.
Just to ask
a
question.
I promise you. Yes, just to ask a question. For fear of looking stupid, for fear, you know, you have this imposter syndrome.
Right.
But mostly for fear of looking stupid in front of your peers.
And how did you overcome all of this, Jean? And we'll talk about the financial crises and how to overcome it. How to overcome it. That's the subject of our conversation today. But how did you then get into that mold of, I need to get over this fear of public speaking so that I can use my voice?
You know, one of the wealthy habits, or the one of the habits that wealthy people adopt, is they act in spite of fear. And we all have these fears. So, you know, I read somewhere that when as babies, we are born with only two fears, and that's the fear of loud noises and the fear of falling. All our other fears have been learned along the way through our experiences, brought through from other people. And all of those fears can be unlearned. But you do need to put in the time and the effort. And, you know, it's all childhood conditioning that has happened, that has made you the way that you are.
Right.
And so there are tools and techniques out there that you can use to reprogram your mind. But the problem is, not a lot of people are willing to go down that road because it's hard and it's painful.
And it calls a lot of you.
Absolutely. And I embarked on this journey probably maybe 10 years ago, where I started looking at focusing on my self-development and really focusing on different aspects of my life and how could I improve and become the best version I could possibly be in each of those categories.
Okay.
And then I started putting tools in place to actually start doing the work.
Congratulations, Jean. Well done. I want to give you a big round of applause because here you are right now.
Oh, thank you.
And you are changing lives, and South Africans' lives need changing because we are collectively finding ourselves in a financial crisis, right? Which is why we've decided to really make this the very first episode of Rise Resilience. When we define what a financial crisis is, Gene, without using jargon, trying to reach the person who needs to hear this message, who doesn't understand or may not necessarily realize that they are in a crisis. So how do we define what a financial crisis is, firstly?
Okay. So again, I mean, I think how you experience money is relative. It's different for everyone.
Right.
And I think when you think about money, when you think about your financial situation, consider the emotions that's going through your body. Like, is it fear? Is it worry? Is it anxiety? Is it stress? Then also make a note of the thoughts that's going on in your head.
Okay.
And that plays a huge part in understanding what a financial crisis means to you in that moment. So the thoughts could be like, oh, you know, and a lot of the times we use very disempowering questions. We ask ourselves very disempowering questions. We use negative self-talk, like, oh, I will never be rich, or rich people suck.
Scarcity mindset.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think when you've stuck in that, and it's very difficult for a lot of us to get out of that scarcity mindset because we don't have the tools. No one's given us the tools and shown us this is how you do it.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's my aim, is to help people to shift out of that mindset and start thinking like wealthy people, because abundance is our birthright. We were all born with this, you know, opportunities and possibilities and somewhere
all these
along.
Gifts.
Absolutely. And everybody has a gift, but they just haven't tapped into it.
Right.
They haven't monetized that gift and said, you know, here's an opportunity. I'm going to focus on building this dream, and I have this vision for my life, because
sure.
Nobody taught them how to do that.
So the definition then of a financial crisis stems from our own understanding of what money is,
what it means to us, and what it can do for us. And I mean, I think, you know, a financial crisis can be spurred on by many different events, and it can occur at different ages. So, I mean,
sure.
Like, obviously mine was at 8.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that was the only financial crisis. There were other times. You know, so you can go through retrenchment. You could go through a divorce. You could
right.
go through the death of a spouse or the death of an income earner. You know, so there's a lot of things that could spur on a financial crisis. But I think the most important thing is to understand, what is your mindset around that in order to help you to get out of that? Because you're always going to have some sort of experience or financial crisis, even
right.
if it's not brought on by you, and you
yes.
can plan as much as you want to. But a financial crisis could happen, like as we saw with COVID.
Right.
You know, a lot of businesses failed to adapt.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of businesses had to close. A lot of people lost their jobs, their
sure.
income. So, yeah. So financial crisis can be brought on by a number of different events.
Listen, I'm going to let you sip some water while I ask you a very pertinent question, right? Because I imagine that you know someone or have seen someone who has gone through some form of a financial crisis, or this is something that you've gone through yourself. And there are usually the most common mistakes or pitfalls that we find ourselves in, right? I'll give an example, and I'll use my own life and story,
okay.
Gene. So I was also working very comfortably, multiple jobs at a certain point in my life. At that time, I could afford, and I did, and I went and bought property. I had two properties, because the financial advice at the time had told me, buy one where it's going to be your matrimonial home. And I was planning to get married that same year. So this was going to be like a surprise home for what would have been my wife had we gotten married. And then buy another property, and then you can use that as a rental property, right?
Okay.
So I made all the right financial decisions, and I had all the financial support and advice from my financial advisors, right? But then life happens, and you get into a crisis for things that you had not planned for, right? So I then lost my job because I got fired. And then now I couldn't now move into this house. I couldn't now continue with this rental property, which I was comfortable to because I had the financial means.
Yeah.
So within that crisis, I find myself having to now go back to the drawing board, as it were, to start over from scratch, from zero. But I imagine there could have been a simpler way to do that, because It's not about working harder, but working smartly. 100%. So what are some of the mistakes that people make, Jean, when they find themselves in a financial crisis? And then we can talk about the comeback. What do you then need to do to bounce back, realistically speaking, and comfortably so?
So I think a big mistake that a lot of people do is the minute, and with young people entering the job market for the very first time, the minute they earn their first salary is that they want to go and splurge.
Sure.
So I think the big mistake that they make is going and buying a new cell phone or buying a car and, you know, trying to accumulate things.
Right.
But there's no provision made for or buffer being built for an emergency.
Right.
So when the first financial crisis happens, now you've already created a lot of debt for yourself, you know, and maybe a year down the line, you lose your job and now you're stuck without an income. But you've got all these bills and to pay and all these loans that you've taken out. You know, if I look at my very first job, I had to move from Cape Town to Johannesburg and I didn't have a place to stay. It was an entry level receptionist position. And, you know, it was just for me to get experience. And I came with the clothes on my back and a suitcase.
Right.
And I lived with family, friends, and it was the weekend. I was starting on the Monday. And on the Sunday, we went somewhere and we got back and my entire suitcase of clothes was stolen.
Oh, no.
So what do you think I did? Because I didn't have cash.
What did you do?
I went and I opened up a store card.
Of course. So you can buy clothes on credit.
So I could buy clothes. Yeah, exactly. But again, it was a need. I couldn't go to work without clothes, obviously.
Yes.
So I needed to do that. And it was something I did. And that just started the spiral of getting more store cards. And I think I remember a time in my life where I probably had about 4 or 5 store cards at different stores. And that's how people end up building a lot of debt. And when a financial crisis, such as losing my income, happens, I don't have money to pay off those expenses. So that's one such example.
And realistically speaking, Jean, that first store card was a necessity, right? Because, and I'm hypothetically speaking here, I wasn't there, but perhaps the people in your family, the people in your surroundings, you weren't the same size. You weren't like in the same clothes.
Yeah.
You couldn't necessarily go and borrow an outfit for every single day that you're going to show up for work until you've made an alternative plan. So the store card was the thing that you could do and that you had to do at that time.
100%. But I think also because of my childhood experience, and this is how important understanding our earliest memory of money and how that has impacted our lives and our thinking, how it can mold us to become or into the person that we become.
Yeah.
I had a problem with receiving from other people. So I would never ask for handouts. It was very difficult for me to ask people. And I was driven by financial independence and financial security. And I think that in itself impacted so much of my the first 30 years of my adult life. You know, it impacted my marriage, which ultimately ended in divorce.
Oh, no.
Because I wasn't comfortable with relying on someone else and trusting someone else to take care of me or, you know, financially to a certain extent.
Where did that mindset come from? Very quickly, Jean. Did this come from the environment where you had grown up until you were 8?
So I think watching my mom rely and, you know, on my dad financially, I didn't want to ever rely on somebody else because I wanted to always have options available to me.
Right.
If, you know, things went south, then I wanted to know that I was able to exit.
Sure.
Because my mental health and my emotional well-being is extremely important to me, more so than my financial well-being.
Congratulations once more, Jean.
Thank you.
Obviously, when we have that mindset shift, a big part of it has to do with our own emotional resilience, right? I imagine.
Yeah.
From your perspective as a life coach, I mean, how can someone stay emotionally resilient during a financial crisis? I mean, you've just mentioned now very practical steps of how our own understanding with the first memory of money has an impact on our view of finances as we grow up in this world.
And I think this is a reason, you know, that will be different for everyone. And I think a lot of the reasons why my approach, and I'm more a financial wellness coach than a life coach, but I think why my approach is very different is because I bring in the emotional relationship to money. I look at, you know, childhood memories of money,
sure,
how we were conditioned, the thoughts and beliefs system around money.
Right.
So that's obviously where I bring the psychology into the conversation.
Okay.
Is understanding the past. And then I use coaching to help my clients shift to where they want to be. And then the how is basically what they need, the steps that they need to do in order to be able to get to that vision. So for me, showing you how to budget is an example so that you can manage your income and expenses better.
Right.
And so that you, when you get to a financial crisis, it's not a huge implication.
Yeah.
So for me, that's part of the solution. It's part of the how.
Okay.
But the starting point is to understand, why is this important to you? Why do you want to achieve financial success? Why do you want to avoid a financial crisis? So when we start asking those questions, we tap into the real reasons. So yours might be because I'd never want to see my children suffer.
Yes.
You know, I want to be able to provide a different life for my child. Or for me, it might be, you know, part of it will be for my child, but a part of it will also be because I want to make an impact on other people's lives so
right.
that they don't make the same mistakes. So that why is the starting point for every single question or every single goal that we have in our lives is to understand why you're doing that. And I think once people understand that why, because it will be different for everyone.
Sure.
The next thing is to understand, well, so if I want to achieve financial wellness or financial success,
right,
what does that look like for me? Does it mean financial freedom? Does it mean having 10 million rand in my bank account? Does it mean owning my own business?
Right.
Whatever that end picture looks like is the vision you're going to work towards. And if you remind yourself of your why every single day, even when you are faced with you know, self-doubt or a challenge or an economic crisis or your, you know, business not going well, you keep reminding yourself of why you're doing this. And
right.
it will motivate you internally to actually get up and go again.
I like that you use the word motivation, Jean, because there are a lot of people that we try and advise on social media platforms, people that would come hear you speak if you're giving a talk somewhere, and they bring and they come into the room with the mindset of, well, my reality is right now in my bank account, there is X amount and it's not the amount that I want in there. So how do I now move from this place to the abundance mindset without really and not understanding? Obviously, they come into your space with a scarcity mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you then convince those people initially
to shift,
to bring them on? How do you bring them onto this boat?
Yeah. So, and it's again, you know, teaching them the principles of adopting wealthy habits.
Right.
So as I said, you know, there's quite a few wealthy habits that wealthy people adopt and they ascribe to. And those are those are available to all of us.
Mm.
But again, implementing them and applying them to our lives is where the difficulty comes up. So as an example, wealthy people focus on solutions and opportunities and
okay.
not dwell on problems.
Right.
Whereas if you're coming from a scarcity mindset, all you see around you is lack. This is not right. This is not right. The government is doing this. You know, my family is doing this. My employer is doing this. We want to blame someone. So it's again having that victim mentality. And if you're constantly in a place where you're blaming other people for your circumstances, nothing's going to change. You've got to take accountability and take control.
Sure.
So the first thing is to identify what your belief system is around money and start adopting some of those wealthy habits. So, you know, again, I tell a lot of people, you know, even if you have an income, even if you're employed, don't be completely reliant on that income. Because if you lose your job, you know, you're relying on another person to employ you. So start looking at other ways to create multiple sources of income.
Right.
Or passive sources of income would be even better.
Mm.
But, you know, when you have multiple sources of income, if you lose your job, you know, it's fine. It's okay.
You're not too reliant on it.
Or maybe at some point your side hustle becomes so lucrative that you decide, actually, I don't want to be employed anymore. I want to focus on my business 100% of the time. So again, it's adopting those mindsets. And I think, you know, when we look at wealthy people, even if they're faced with a problem, they will look for solutions they'll look for a way to solve that problem.
Yes.
They'll also look at the problems around them, you know, around their community, around, you know, workplace, business, and they'll find a way, a, 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 they look for an opportunity to turn that problem into a solution or find a solution to that problem, monetize it so that they can obviously earn some money out of it.
I love that. I love that, Jean. Do you have a book that we can go and read, more material that we can go in our own time, perhaps, you know, just really sift through to see where we can start applying some of these tools in our own lives in real time?
So the only book that I've written is a children's storybook, a series of stories teaching kids about money, because my intention is to help raise money smart households. And I think when we start educating kids from a young age, because, and I think a lot of parents are not aware of this, that they are passing their own, you know, preconditioned ideas about money onto their children, which could be negative, self-limiting beliefs that get imposed on
the
them.
The scarcity mindset could have been a thing that's passed down.
So, I mean, if you have someone who is growing up in an entrepreneurial space, their parents will encourage them to be entrepreneurs and say, right, yes, you know, go and start your own business. But if you're someone who's employed and you've got a fear of losing money, you'll tell your children, don't, rather work for, you know, an employer. Don't go and take that risk. It's too risky. Don't invest your money here, you know, and so then that fear is ingrained in you, and then to overcome it, you know, so part of the process is to start educating children around money and give parents the tools that they need to be able to have more meaningful, empowering conversations with their children. So there is the book, obviously, that for that age market, but I've created a whole program of online courses that is available to individuals and employers for their employees. And it's a four-step financial wellness process that takes you through, you know, different different steps in order for you to be able to improve your financial wellness. And there's content in there for everyone in the household. Your young adults entering the workplace for the first time, people getting married, domestic staff, teenage children.
Sure.
So I've created content for everyone. So there is that. And I've priced it ridiculously low because I want people to be able to access the content without making excuses that I don't have money. So if they don't have money, the other option is I've got a YouTube channel where there's tons of videos. I've got blog posts. I'm on all social media platforms. I'm always looking to create content for people so that they can at least get started on the journey of improving their financial wellness.
I love that, Jean. Before I let you go, and we have run out of time, how can individuals, and we're obviously going to try and start some form of a series so we could call you back and unpack this further, but how can I as an individual build financial resilience, right? And the reason for that would be to prevent future crises, as it were.
And that's why financial planning is so critical. And
right,
I think, you know, a large majority of people don't have access to a financial advisor or a financial planner because they don't have money to invest.
Right.
And typically that's the market that I like to deal with because I want to create clients of the future. I want to get them to a point where they do have money to invest. Unfortunately, our financial planning industry is remunerated through either commission, but there is a shift towards charging fees for advice.
Okay.
But again, not everybody can afford to work with a financial planner. And so, you know, the financial resilience can be built up through, first of all, by having a financial plan in place.
Okay.
If you're not able to do that, you know.
And having a financial plan, Jean, doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a lot of money in the bank.
Yeah.
A financial plan speaks to your it's a financial plan, regardless of how much money you have in the bank,
100%.
Right?
So I always say this, financial wellness is not a once-off event. It's a journey. It's the same. Like if you want to be fit or you want to lose weight, if you lose that 5 kilos in 6 months and you go back to your normal unhealthy habits, what's going to happen? You're going to end up picking up that weight and you're going to end up being where you were a year ago. So financial wellness is exactly the same thing. It's a blueprint. It's a financial plan is a blueprint that you can work towards.
Okay.
So, you know, and again, on an annual basis, you'll meet with your financial planner to say, are we on track? Are there any changes that's happened in your lifestyle that we now need to accommodate? Are there any, you know, investments that we need to review the strategy and things like that? So it's a plan that you work towards and hopefully you get there by being disciplined and doing the work.
Okay. So the plan is not necessarily dependent on how much you have, but you just have to have a plan to start.
Yeah. And so if I look at the financial wellness plans that I do, because I don't advise on any products or give any advice on any services, financial services products.
Right.
So what I do is I look at, I help them take them through that process when I do one-on-one coaching.
Okay.
Is to understand why this is important to them and
sure.
what it is they want to achieve. Identifying, I'd use a financial wellness gap analysis, which identifies where the gaps are.
Okay.
In their financial plan.
Right.
And then create a plan for them to actually get out of debt. Because a lot of the people that I deal with are over indebted. They don't have surplus money to invest.
Right.
And start getting ideas together about how they can actually work towards achieving that vision.
I love that. Jean, we are definitely going to call you back so we can revisit this conversation. There's obviously a lot that we need to still talk about, right? In real terms, we can give people practical examples on how to come back from a financial setback like a crisis. I mean, none of us ever plan to lose our sources of income. And life will life at times when it needs to. But how do you then come out of that with a solid plan to move forward?
So again, I think, when you look at your current situation and you identify what are the priorities, what are the most important things you need to tackle first, because it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it can be very, it can create a lot of anxiety. So I think it's important to just take financial stock of where you are at. And just to, remain focused on the bigger picture.
Right.
We're all going to go through challenges. Whatever it is you're experiencing is temporary. Mm. Everything in life is temporary. And I think when you start viewing it from that perspective, you'll understand that this, whatever's happening to you is happening for a reason. It's to teach you. It's to help you to move to the next level. If we look at people that win the lotto.
Yes.
A lot of the times they lose all the money that they've won because they haven't shifted their mindsets from scarcity to the way wealthy people think. Wealthy people don't splurge on things like going and buying 10 cars and, branded clothes. And they will put away money first. They will invest that money. They will build a business. So they create multiple sources of income. But it's all about shifting that mindset.
It's all in the psychology of your own understanding of what money is. I love that because when you win the lotto, and this is across the globe, they equip you with financial advisors. Mm. There's an entire team that tell you where to invest, how much, for how long. There are people that tell you where to put away what, for what reason. And even with that, a lot of these, most of them, like 90% of the lotto winners still end up with a lot less than what they had when they won.
Yeah.
Because the mind isn't necessarily ready for that.
Yeah, 100%.
Jean, thank you so much. Jean joining us today here on our very first episode of Rise Resilience. And our conversation starter to break the ice for this brand new podcast here on the Podcast Party was to show you how you can overcome a financial crisis. We're going to come back with the next episode and bring you even lots more. Thanks for watching.